this is definitely a step in the right direction. The Alaska Policy Forum promotes policies that we think will result in greater individual liberty. We think each of you knows better how to spend the money in your pocket than the folks down in Juneau do. Again, the... The biggest buckets, you know, to go back over here, health and social services, education and early development, University of Alaska. We need to take a look at Medicaid. Under the Walker administration, we had 50,000 people added to public health. A lot of these folks actually are single, able-bodied individuals. We don't have the exact numbers yet, but nationally, when you take a look at national numbers, folks on Medicaid, a little more than half don't work at all. Zero income. Approximately 52% work 8 hours or less a week. That's what happens. So working with the administration, I know the administration is looking to make changes to Medicaid to encourage healthy, able-bodied folks to work themselves off of Medicaid. It's not trying to punish anybody. It's pretty clear statistically in other states that are trying to work people off public welfare, public benefits, things like that. Within a year, incomes typically double. They don't stay in food service industries. It's not like they're all working at McDonald's or something like that. Hundreds of industries are represented. Within a couple of years, incomes double and triple. You have the pride that comes with earning a paycheck. It's a lot nicer to cash a paycheck than to cash a welfare check, my personal opinion. So areas like that, taking a look at the size of our government payroll also. We have 17,000 public employees, give or take. Just to give you an idea, the public cost of the average state worker in 2016 was $105,000, almost $106,000 per job, while the average private sector employee cost was about $68,000. Now, that's total compensation. That includes things like health care. Well, we all know health care is expensive in Alaska, so the problem actually exacerbates itself. Government jobs pay well, the benefits are good, and that sort of feeds into an ever-growing cost. So we have to take a look and see, are there efficiencies? Is the government doing too much in too many different places? And again, one of the unintended consequences of that is government can actually be crowding out private industry. You know, it's kind of hard for private industry to compete with government. If government is providing all these services in all these places, you know, that doesn't leave a lot of room for the private sector. So those are some of the areas that we're looking at.
All right, thanks. And Jeff, there's been a lot of talk from elected officials here when we've talked about Tabor. Legislators are all but very resourceful, and they've typically can find ways to get around certain ways and make, you know. So a lot of people said, okay, well, that's great. Tabor was enacted in 92. It's been a while. How is it? Is it still effective? Have elected officials found ways to just get around that or loopholes? Can you kind of explain how it looked then and now and kind of where it's come over the few years?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's always wailing and gnashing of the teeth by politicians particularly, right? When you try and rein in government spending, there are folks who do that. That you've heard it 1,000 times here. We hear it in Colorado all the time. You know, a local tax increase. Well, if we do that, we're going to have to cut police and fire. How many times have you heard that? And then the tax increase doesn't pass. They come in, and lo and behold, they figure out a way to do it without cutting police and fire. It's a very common tactic that quite frankly some in politics use to scare citizens into, you know, supporting and feeding the growth of government. And it's just that simple. Now, the great thing about the Taxpayer Bill of Rights in Colorado is if you want more taxes, you can give yourself more taxes. You know, and it does happen. If politicians come to you, elected officials, and they say, you know, we need this, and they make a good case for it, and they convince you, then you will vote for that, and that tax will get increased. So it is a way to take pressure off the system And that's happened. That happens quite often in Colorado. Now, there are lots of other times where they'll come and ask, and the voters will just say, no, we're not going to do it. They just tried to do it in this last election. They had two big initiatives that they put on the ballot, and they both got overwhelmingly defeated. One by 20% got defeated. Well, if we didn't have the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, guess what? And we just left that up to legislators, there would have been a gigantic tax increase pushed on to the people of Colorado who didn't want it, because at the ballot box, they said they didn't want it. The other thing that we do have in Colorado, and I think it's a shame that we keep doing it, is you know, we have taxes and fees, and the Taxpayer Bill of Rights applies to tax increases. So they have to come to you with a tax increase. The Colorado Supreme Court ruled a few years back that it doesn't apply to fee increases. So guess what? Now they call a lot of taxes fee increases to get it through. We just had our Fish and Wildlife Department came through and increased a bunch of fees. They didn't have to take it to the voters because they called them fees instead of taxes. And so there's some gamesmanship going on there, Ryan. But overall, it's been a great success. I mean, we are one of the most, and the governor mentioned it earlier. I mean, the economy in Colorado, Denver, you can almost not buy a house. Housing prices are going through the roof. I'm not telling you should emulate necessarily Colorado and Alaska, but you sure shouldn't emulate California. Let's just put it that way.
All right. Ms. Ardoin, if the education budget in Alaska is cut 25%, how do you envision our schools preparing Alaska's children to be competitive in an ever-changing world? Please be specific with any discussion of efficiencies. And again, any of you can also jump in on that.
Well, we would like to see our schools prepare children for the world that we're in now and the ever-changing world. And that's why we talked about the solution has not been to continue to spend money on the system that we have. We need to change the way we do business. We need to change the way we educate our children.
Yeah.
So the governor's going, I'm sort of teasing this out. He's gonna be coming out with a education reform plan in the next few weeks. So I'm sort of just teeing that up. Because again, as I said, we learned that pouring more money into the system that we have does not produce better outcomes. We do need to get our fiscal house in order, but that's not the end of the road. That's the beginning of the road, the beginning of the road to reforming education and many of our other state services.
So, for example, we assess in the state of Alaska, and we use PEAK currently, it's called, and the educators know what I'm talking about. We're having conversations with educators across the state. We're getting that conversation. We'll continue that over the next couple of weeks as we put together a bill for education. But MAP testing, for example, the measures of academic progress, is more of a tool that teachers believe could be used in the classroom to identify areas in which students need more help. That's an example. We are looking at a bill to ensure that K-3 reading is focused on. In other words, we build schools, especially elementary schools, around K-3 reading. And again, we are looking at different states that have modeled this, that have actually increased the reading outcomes. Another example that a lot of folks don't necessarily agree with that are in the educational establishment. In Anchorage, for example, or Fairbanks, you may have an individual, a child or two, in a low-performing school. But it's difficult for that parent, especially if it's a single parent, to be able to get their child across town to a school that better may suit their needs. Why not look at an educational transportation allotment, where that individual, the parent, could set up an Uber type or Lyft type situation with a bunch of neighborhood families, kids, parents, in which they get a scholarship to allow their child to take a vehicle driven by a neighborhood individual that kind of along the lines of an Uber or Lyft type of concept, and go across town to where that school is that better meets the needs of the child. Public school we're talking about. There's a number of things that we can do, and again, we're putting together a bill and we're going to get input from everybody on it, but we need to begin to look at things a little differently. We are talking with some folks in the tribes, especially in rural Alaska. They're looking at tribal compacts to start compacting with the state of Alaska in order to put together schools that they feel better meet the needs of their kids. I think we would all agree that the outcomes are not where we believe they should be. I think we can all agree that we can do better, especially when it comes to K-3 reading. All of our kids should be proficient, for example, in algebra before they leave ninth grade. This is a gatekeeper course. Coding academies are what we're looking at too. And we're gonna be working with any and all school districts that want to start up a coding academy. There are opportunities with the Department of Labor. We were meeting with Secretary Acosta a month and a half ago, as well as the Secretary of Education, DeVos, in putting together coding academies in which we would get federal funds to put these academies together, in which children and adults could go to the academies, and after 9 to 12 weeks of being trained in how to program and code, they get a certificate. We had IBM in Juneau last week at a introduction to coding academies. They have 650 jobs in the state of Alaska that are currently open. The moment somebody gets that certificate after 12 weeks, they would get that job paying anywhere from $75,000 on up. 12 weeks of education that a child could get, an adult could get, that could change their life significantly. We just have to start looking at things differently. I would throw it back to folks in my profession and in the educational establishment. What are you willing to do differently to get different outcomes other than money? Other than more money, what are you willing to do? And I want to have that conversation. Instead of having a yelling match, you know, what are your ideas to improve the educational outcomes? If it's just more money, I'd have to go back and ask you why the educational outcomes weren't better when we had more money in the past. And if we put more money in the future, I want to know what's going to be done differently other than more money. And I'll end it with this. In March, the test scores came out for NAEP, which is a national test given every 2 years to grades 4 through 8 nationwide. Alaska, when it came to reading, was basically dead last. There wasn't one peep. There was no outcry. There was no, we've got to declare an educational emergency. There was nothing. However, when the budget came out, and I understand this, there's been a lot of discussion about educational funding. Alaska for too long has been focused on the inputs, how much money we put into a system, whether it be the university, whether it be K-12, whether it be public safety, and we're less concerned about the outcomes. And that's something we've got to change. And I'm looking forward to having the dialogue with folks on what we would do differently in education. Repeal regulations, free up the hands of teachers to do what they know is best in the classroom, I'm there. Change legislation to help free up teachers in the classroom to lessen the administrative burden or oversight, I'm there. I'm willing to listen to anything that's going to change the outcomes, but I'm just asking you, please, give me something more than more money will change it, because that has not happened. And we have a moral imperative to offer our kids the best education possible. I have a lot of faith in teachers. I was part of the Teacher Mentor Project. I was a teacher. I believe when teachers are empowered to do their job in the classroom, I'm not just saying this, you can get some incredible outcomes, but I think it's become so bureaucratic, so top-heavy, so regulated, it'd be tough to be a teacher. But the point I'm trying to make is, let's work together, and I'll end it with, let's work together, but please, just don't say more money will solve it, because you know in your heart of hearts that's not the case, or it would have solved it to begin with.
All right, Governor, we're going to do one more question and then let you close so that you can make your flight. If you guys are willing to stay around for a little bit longer, we can get through a couple more questions. Or you all came together. That might not work. Yeah, same flight. Never mind. All right, you guys don't want to put him up for a little while longer?
Here.
All right, we'll do. All right, we'll do one more question to kind of the group, and then Governor, we'll go ahead and close. So this one says, I am willing to pay my fair share in income taxes, and I want to see workers who work here and outside Alaska also pay taxes. Why are you trying to curb spending so dramatically in 1 year?
We've talked about this for years. We've talked about this for years, and all we've done is talk about it. And we've gone through $16 billion, $14 billion, $8 billion. We're now down to $2 billion in our CBR, our basic piggy bank. In 14 months, it'll be gone. Again, if you don't ratchet down the incline in spend of 4 to 4.5% per year, you're going to be talking about taxes every single year. It's not as if we have a bill we need to pay just one time. If it was just a bill we need to pay one time, you could put money into it. It's then, end of story. This is a continual, constant draw upon the people of Alaska, the businesses of Alaska. That's why we are proposing constitutional amendments to hem us in. We believe if we do that, we believe if we reduce the budget, I mean, seriously, you do have ferry runs throughout various times of the year, especially in the wintertime, leaving port with not a lot of folks on them. The question is, do we want to keep paying for that out of a PFD or an income tax? We just negotiated a lease 3 months ago in the state of Alaska. We saved $17 million. $17 million that would have been paid through taxes or a PFD. The owner of the building said nobody ever came to talk to us about renegotiating a lease. There's a number of things that we can do to save money before we go after you in tax. And I do believe that if we put into the Constitution the ability or inability for the legislature to tax you without your concurrence, the legislature will get better at having conversations with you and trying to convince you that we have reduced inefficiencies where they are and that we really do need the money for public safety and corrections, et cetera. But until we do that, we just had $14 billion that we spent. What makes people think if we have tax money, we won't spend it just like we did? We can do better. And so until we get to that point, I'm not interested in taking more money off of you until we reduce this, we reduce the size of the government, hem it in, become more efficient.
And do you want to do a real quick closing remarks before we shut down?
This is not an easy task. And I knew this was not going to be an easy task. I was hoping when I was running in the campaign back in October or September, we were looking at potentially oil at being $83 a barrel. And we could have a step down approach to the budget like I had proposed several years ago to get us to where we need to go. We have tremendous opportunity to right the ship of Alaska, or we can continue what we're doing. I want to know from the other side, folks in the legislature and others, if we don't fix this today, what does tomorrow look like? There was a time, especially for those of us that are a little gray and going bald, our parents took pride in leaving us a better country. They used to take pride in that. You know, my parents were Depression era individuals. They used to save string and cans and so forth. And they said, you'll never understand what it was like. And they used to take great pride in sending their kids to college or when their kids got a job. It didn't matter if you were Democrat or Republican. My parents were FDR Democrats. They wanted us all to be millionaires. They wanted us all to make money because of what they went through. They wanted to leave us a better country. They wanted to leave us a better state. This will be the first time in history we may not leave our kids a better country at $23 trillion in debt because we just want to spend, spend, spend. This may be the first time in 40 years we leave our kids a state that's in worse shape than the state that we had, the opportunities that we had. I see tremendous opportunities for the state of Alaska. I went to that investor conference, and I talked about electricity. You have a small country by the name of Iceland at the same latitude that we are. Isolated, small population. They don't have oil. They don't have gold. They don't have gas. They don't have timber. But what they did was reduce their electrical costs. And why am I pivoting to that? Because if we can save some of our money and get more hydro online, monetize our gas in the solar, turn our gas in the slope and turn it into cheap electricity, if we can do that for the state of Alaska because we're detached from the rest of the country and have cheap electricity and less healthcare costs, we can be like Iceland. They have virtually zero unemployment. They have 4 smeltering plants on the island in which they smelter aluminum, bauxite ore into aluminum, and they get paid a tremendous amount of money. They're a mecca for tourism and banking, a small country of 300,000 with no resources because they were able to use the resources that they had, hydro and geothermal, and turn it into cheap electricity. What I'd like to do is once we get this budget under control, drive down the cost of electricity, drive down the cost of healthcare, and bring in other industries and businesses in the state of Alaska. Our locale, in terms of being on the Pacific with Asia, and the fact that we have the third busiest cargo port airport hub in the world, and we're 8 to 10 hours to any industrialized place in the Northern Hemisphere, gives us so much opportunity. But if we're going to spend every single penny we have and not build Alaska, but spend it to pay for tomorrow's bill, and tomorrow's bill, and tomorrow's bill, we're going to turn this great state into a big national park that's almost in receivership with the federal government. Those that want to make money are going to leave the state of Alaska. We already have people leaving. We already have the longest recession in the state's history. We already have the situation happening now, no matter how much money we spent from government. The only way we're going to turn this around is take this bull by the horns. Everybody's going to have to give a little to get a lot. But I think if we solve this budget issue this year, and we do it in a semi-permanent fashion with the constitutional amendments, I believe you're going to see a more robust private economy. You're going to see opportunities you never even thought about. If you don't solve this issue, we're going to be back here next year. Same message, same request, same pleading for more money. We'll be out of savings. PFD will be gone another year and a half. We'll be looking at taxes, and a lot of us will be heading south, and a lot of businesses will be heading south. It doesn't have to be this way.
All right. Thank you, Governor. So that is going to do it for this one. I really appreciate you all coming out. And if you like what you have heard here, please, there are specific representatives here in the Kenai area that may not agree as much. Call, email, encourage them. In addition, we didn't get through all the questions, but we will be giving this to the governor's staff, and they will write answers as quick as they can, and then we'll email it out to all of you. Expect that probably not right away because we still have a whole week of the tour, but we will do our best to get all these questions answered and returned to you guys. So again, thank you all for coming out, and have a good night.